Cyber Therapy. My name is Ashley and I am your host here from Jupiter One. I am so glad that you're here and I am so stoked for the episode that we have today. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the show where we get to talk to tech professionals, get to know them, get their background, some stories, and basically some therapy in as well to kind of, you know, come to grips with the struggles that we're dealing with today. So we stream basically twice a month, the first and third Wednesday of every month at this time, 3 p.m. Eastern. So you are welcome to tune in live. We are always available on demand on YouTube and LinkedIn as well. And we also push the audio over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's a new addition this season. So definitely if you are not a video watcher, you are welcome to just subscribe to Cyber Therapy on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you will get notified whenever a new episode comes out. So with that, today, we're going to get into some really interesting topics around digital transformation, specifically how incentive structures and shared purpose and all of the also softer skills that go into digital transformation and pulling off that journey. So with that, would love to introduce our guests. We've got Jason. He is a principal solutions architect over at AWS. And our friend Jeff, who we will not let you know what his last name is for privacy reasons, but he is currently the cloud product owner at a company called Bumblebee that's what we're going to go with this time. So with that, feel free to bring on Jeff and Jason to the stage. Woo! Oh, and you're the same location today. How's it going, gents?
Hi, Ashley. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's going great. And yeah, we are in the same location for the, awesome. I don't know, how many times have we been in the same location? Like 4 or 5 times.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's not like, it's more rare than it is normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys certainly seem chummy and familiar with each other. So like how did you guys meet? Where are you tuning in from today? And is it an everyday occasion that you get to see each other this often? Like together, work together, face to face?
Not too often, Ashley. We're in Seattle this week talking about AWS and technology. Yeah, we go back a little while, right? Like, why don't you tell the story?
How far back do you want me to go?
Well, maybe not that far back.
This is like, how did you meet on a dating platform?
Yeah, right. Exactly. No. So Jason has been working on an account for Bumblebee for some time, and I'm a recent addition to Bumblebee, and so I met Jason just because I guess in a way we were both added to the account, and I've always been a huge believer in the cloud provider expertise that can be utilized and consulted with. And so Jason, the first thing that I did was say, hey, Jason, you're my new BFF because, you know, he's the cloud provider solution architect. So he's the guy that knows all the nuts and bolts and how one might be able to utilize those, and we may not. So
you're too nice.
Oh, it's true.
What a truth. That's a great partnership that you guys have. Mm-hmm. For the audience listeners, do you mind kind of just giving a little background on your role today and maybe some of the most exciting parts of your role these days?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I've been at AWS since January 2020. I'm a principal solutions architect now, and you know, working with Jeff and the company. You know, what I like to say that I try to focus on is customer obsession, right? So helping customers guiding them in technical capability, education, best practices, escalations, those kinds of things. I also have a background in security, so bringing some of that security expertise from an enterprise standpoint, you know, to customers and Jeff and the organization, and just kind of like what are some of the mistakes that I made maybe when I was a customer doing this? And so, yeah, that's kind of what I do, you know, for customers like Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I help the company that I'm with, which is I'm new to, with changing what they're doing today into a different way of doing it and mm-hmm. utilizing cloud as a mechanism to enact that change, right? And so I think that the a lot of what I do is not technical, but it requires a lot of technical expertise. And so it's an interesting dichotomy where you have to understand, but not prescribe, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, and that is exciting to me. That's something that like I'm constantly changing in myself because of, I have a very technical background, and to get the right outcomes, you got to be able to ask, I think, the right questions in a way that really can unlock the thoughtfulness and creativity of others. So mm-hmm. that's kind of what I do, I think, every day.
Nice. Thank you. I appreciate that, both of you. It sounds so digital transformation to me. The more I talk to people, the more I realize it is a practice of change management across an entire organization. And I feel like security, Jason, with your roots in security, right? Security is also a lot about change management, just with how fast things are evolving and how do you continue to keep your organization secure. Because you have to rely on people to do certain things in order to keep your company secure. So one could say that you both are in the trenches of change management day in and day out. So I appreciate mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. One of the books that I've been reading, it's called The First 90 Days. And the premise of it is essentially there's transition happening. Either you're going into transition, whether it's a new internal role or you're changing companies to a new position, or somebody around you is going through transition, so therefore it's going to impact you. And so the book is just really good at like giving a framework to how to approach and get up to speed as quickly as possible in the first 90 days of the new transition. And so what the three areas of learning that they talk about are technical, political, and cultural. And I think that that'll definitely come through in the course of our conversation, but wanted to just off the top of your head, off the cusp, like what are the three most important things that come to mind that need to be in place for a successful transformation journey? It can be technical, political, cultural, but we got to do just three important things. So,
good question. I would say that, when I was a customer before I came over to AWS, and we moved a bunch of workloads to AWS over a period of years, and now working with Jeff and Bumblebee, like the biggest thing that I see that needs to be in place is top-down executive leadership and alignment. So we need to have CTOs and CIOs aligned with our goals. A cloud journey, a digital transformation journey, it can't be a grassroots effort. You need to have folks from leadership that are aligned on, well, incentives and what are the goals and what is the business value that we want to drive throughout the organization. Mm-hmm. And they need to set the tone, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I've seen other customers that have tried to do like cloud journeys because it was just like, hey, I heard about it, right? I heard cloud's like this new thing and we should go do it, right?
Yes.
That's right. But those goals aren't aligned with like a business value. Like what are the things that we're actually trying to drive for the company? Top down, top line revenue, bottom line, cutting expenses, whatever those things happen to be, that has to be really in place. And so based off of, your technical, political, cultural, I think probably that's some political and cultural, just getting folks aligned from the top down to be able to execute on that strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. You either have a burning platform or you don't. The technical aspects of it, to Jason's point, I think that's something that you know, is either baked in because you have a burning platform, but it's not, it can't be a grassroots thing. It maybe starts as a grassroots, and leadership can be then sold because the grassroots sees the problems inherent in the system that causes a lack of speed to value. But if you don't have that, it's not going to go anywhere. You know, if you don't have the leadership alignment and support, it's going to be a slog. Let me tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll add maybe one more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to finish maybe the thought, Ashley. So a couple years ago, Andy Jassy was on stage at reInvent and talked basically about a lot of these things, like what do all companies need to do if they're going to undergo a digital transformation? And hitting on your technical point there, you need to train your builders. Like, folks need to know how to operate in the cloud. It's a different operating model. There are right ways and wrong ways to use this technology, right? You could, you know, you want to make sure that that your environment is configured in a way that keeps you secure, that keeps you cost effective, that keeps you reliable. And so, you know, teams need to be educated on that. Mm-hmm. And you can hire people to go do that to give you kind of a jump start. But you really need to have some kind of training plan for your builders so that they, you know, they build in the right way, not just the right way according to AWS, but the right way according to the company.
Yeah.
So the company is mm-hmm. their own patterns, right? So you got to have some alignment between the two.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you selectively said CIOs and CTOs, but I think that security alignment also matters too, right? And I think that this probably ties in well with the story that we want to incorporate, one of the stories. And I know, Jeff, you worked at a company that we're going to call Blue Jay, where that alignment wasn't quite there. So give us, paint the picture. What was the beginning journey like? What was the mission that you were given? And we'll start there and then continue on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I will say to your point about the C-suite, different organizations have different reporting structures for the CISO, right? Some mm-hmm. they report to the chief risk officer, some report to the CIO, some report mm-hmm. to the CTO, some report mm-hmm. to the CEO. It changes around too, right? So where I was at Blue Jay, I was charged to bring the company to the cloud. And as a not a C-suite person, I needed the support of the C-suite. And when I started, the CISO reported to the CIO. About 2 months after I started, the CISO got a promotion. And he reported to the CEO, now was equal with the CIO. And that's when the significant tension actually started to begin, because the incentive structures just changed, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that there's a reporting structure change, the CISO, while doing an amazing job at focusing on risk, was completely incentivized by de-risking the company, which mm-hmm. Financially he was incentivized by de-risking the company. And when you de-risk, you want zero change to the environment. Where you look at like what cloud gives you is the ability to elastically change on a consistent basis. And that is a very different way of thinking. And at first, let me tell you that my approach to dealing with that structure was to push back against the system with extreme force. And that doesn't work well.
When you're trying to evolve.
mm-hmm, yeah. So I set up a second office in our human resources area. It was in the corner where I had to face the wall many times.
Sent to the principal's office, huh?
Yes, exactly. I learned a lot about me in that. And I also learned that, you know, really this cloud journey for me wasn't about technical capabilities, but it was about people change. And so I also found out that the only person I can actually change is me. Mm-hmm. And so what does that do if I start changing me externally for cloud adoption, right? And so I think that, like, you know, the thing that was really impeding progress for our journey had a lot to do with how I approached the situation as the person who was leading the cloud adoption. And it really wasn't until I started to fix that mm-hmm. that progress started to significantly be made. So that may sound odd, but I had to fix me first.
I actually think that's very insightful, because I will say, you know, if you're trying to institute change anywhere, it's easy, like when you hit a lot of roadblocks, it's easy to blame all of the things around you mm-hmm. instead of recognizing the common denominator. The common denominator is you, right? So if you're hitting roadblocks everywhere, then maybe that there's something in the approach that needs to change. Yeah. Yeah. Now, before we get further, mm-hmm. I wanted to ask a question, because I noticed when you said the mission you were charged with was to move to the cloud, but I found it interesting that you didn't say why. Was there like an actual reason why BlueJay was trying to move to the cloud? Or was it just a, ooh, it's sparkly and shiny and we should probably do it for survival?
Yeah, so it's interesting. BlueJay had a problem in that they're running out of power in the data center. And it was going to be millions of dollars to add more power. And they were trying to decide, you know, should we do that? Or should we look at this cloud thing? And so they're like, well, let's try out the cloud thing, because that's cheaper than $7 million, right? And so basically that was it. There was no burning platform, though, because BlueJay had the financial means to be able to afford the power upgrade. They just didn't want to, really, right? And they wanted to test some stuff out, which meant there was no forcing function to change incentive structures or behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you think about like what drives behaviors, like definitely incentive structures for sure, but like what are they incentivized by? It's either love or fear, right? And so mm-hmm. In this case, there was people of significant power who loved money. And so that incentive structure drove those behaviors to de-risk things. And then they drove the entire behavior of the cyber organization mm-hmm. to de-risk things. To the threat of job elimination if they didn't, if something screwed up. And so massive fear sent through the org, and that created a lot of challenges to adoption of new ways of working, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really until I was able to step back and walk a mile in their shoes, like what mm-hmm. is it like for them to be under constant fear of losing their job if they miss one checkbox, mm-hmm. right? And what are the things that would need to be true to get their buy-in to this new way of working? And that, like, that's what I'm talking about when you got to work on yourself. You have to step mm-hmm. back and say, you know, what really matters to them? And that changed the entire conversation, let me tell you. It didn't So, I mean, it's interesting when you're talking to somebody, if you want to help them accomplish their goal, how willing they are to work with you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a different way of thinking about things and working with people. And if you can find how to accomplish your own thing while making their thing true, then that's really, I think, the sweet spot of gaining adoption of something you're trying to do. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a lot of trust building. Like when you're able to empathize with somebody else and what they're trying to accomplish, and really understand what triggers their like crocodile brain, right, to fight or flight. Once you're able to kind of understand that and unlock it, that totally opens up a whole new realm that you can play in as somebody who's trying to impact change. And so very, very cool. I appreciate you sharing all of that. I know we could probably dive into so much more of that story, but I also want to contrast this with Jason's experience at a different company, at GE, because I think that there's a lot of different transformation journeys out there. And I think juxtaposing kind of some of the obstacles that you ran into, Jeff, at BlueJay, with some of Jason's experience at GE, can kind of give a rounded picture of just the different types of things that you can run into. So Jason, would love to hear a little bit about your journey at GE before you got to AWS, obviously. You also went through a cloud transformation journey there. So help me set the stage. What was the starting point, the initial mission that was given to you, and also how did leadership take charge there?
Yeah, actually, great. I think back upon those times very fondly, right? And we started this cloud journey back in, I joined the team in 2014, but it was started, the program was started probably a year ahead of that, 2013 or so. And it was like an organization-wide, through all of the company, all of General Electric, you know, there was this mission to move things to the cloud. And there's no secret, there's case studies and everything else written about this. But I joined the oil and gas team. So oil and gas was a business unit at the time. And our charter back in those days was to take cost out by any means possible. Oil and gas is a very volatile industry. Costs go up, costs go down. If the price per barrel of oil is down, then we need to find a way to take cost out of the environment. And so I just remember, you know, joining the group and hearing my manager at the time. He told us our job is to make changes safely, like and quickly. Like that's supposed to be our job. And so, you know, we had alignment all the way from the CTO and CIO of the business unit all the way down to mobilize and build a wave plan and move applications and move applications quickly. And so over the course of, you know, 3-4 years, we moved 450 applications. My team was responsible for operating all of that. And, you know, just because our KPIs for this were cost out and velocity, like move fast, take cost out wherever you can. You know, we learned a lot of things about ourselves, right? We learned that we can't, as an operations team, we can't scale to support all of these applications. We need to fall back on things like automation and self-service. And so we built tools to help our business units actually do these things. And I just remember, you know, one of the things that, you know, we were able to do right away is get security alignment. And so we had people from our security organization that were embedded in our teams. Like they were with us from the very beginning. And like, you know, when we thought about, you know, how do we operate these applications and how do we move data, you know, we were met with lots of restrictions too, right? Like this is a new technology. In 2014, it was new, right? And so it was, you know, risky. It was considered, it was considered to be untrusted, you know, compared to the data center. And so really having security with us and their incentives aligned with ours to move things quickly, you know, really helped us accelerate, get past a lot of those blockers, you know, and move applications and build solutions, build accelerators is what we call them. Mm-hmm. We talked about how do we move data to the cloud? And I remember, you know, getting on a whiteboard with my security counterpart and some of the other engineers, and we built this tool called S3 Shuttle. And basically all it was a script. It was just a simple script, right? And it had used rotating credentials to upload data to an S3 bucket. And then after the credentials were about to expire, it would automatically update those, continue to update that data. And that was like a simple solution that we built in an hour on a whiteboard, and we had it implemented and moving data to the cloud, you know, in a couple of days. And just because we had the teams aligned on the same things, we had security involved from day one. It was awesome. Like, I mean, that's why I think fondly back on those days. It was a magical time.
I find it interesting because, I like that you admit that you were met with a lot of restrictions, I should say. And I would say constraints are a creative's best friend, even though we fight against them, right? But what I also find interesting is that you had security team members on embedded on your team. But Jeff, didn't you have security team members also embedded on like your project team at BlueJay?
Yeah. Not initially. They embedded is an interesting word. Let me say that. and they were a part of the cloud journey, and they mm-hmm. came to a number of our scrum ceremonies. Mm-hmm. But they were there to say no. That's what their job basically was. That's what they were instructed to basically do. Don't let bad things happen, right? As mm-hmm. opposed to, here are the bad things we don't want to happen. What are the things that need to be true so that we can also execute this transformation? I think mm-hmm. it's the difference in leadership's framing of what they actually want to accomplish. So yeah, they were with us, and you mm-hmm. know what? The more we built trust with them, the more they were willing to think, well, how could we do this, right? Mm-hmm. I think it got a lot better, but it was still. Very difficult, let me tell you. Very difficult to do. So Jason's story is like, oh man, that's awesome. You know.
Well, yeah, because it sounds like Jason with Jason's story, right? It sounds like the security team members who were in the trenches with you, they were really in the trenches with you to try and figure out the a solution to the problem together with all of you, given the constraints.
Whereas. Sorry, it sounds to me like the CISO also was interested in taking cost out of the system. That's what it sounds like to me, right? He was aligned to that, mm-hmm. or she, mm-hmm. you know? And not at BlueJay. That wasn't the case. And so that misalignment is really what caused us to have very different stories, I think.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Let me ask the question, because... I may have missed this when you were telling your story, Jeff. How did you discover, or what were the things that you noticed through the course of your time at BlueJay that led you to believe it was an incentive structure thing versus just a personality rub?
I do a lot of listening. And there was... there was a gentleman in leadership who I was talking with one day about the problems that I was going through. You know, mm-hmm. I can't do that. This person is saying this. This person won't, you know, prioritize that. And like, you know, cloud is such a horizontal thing that you need a lot of, when you have a siloed organization like we did, you need a lot of participation and alignment from all of those silos to get anything accomplished. So I think I was venting one day more than anything. And he was a friend. He wasn't a direct leader of mine, but he was a friend. And he said, you know, Jeff, everybody's just got a different thing that they are going to be rewarded on. You know, why don't you got to find like the common reward for all of them. And it's like, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's an incentive structure right there.
Uh-huh.
And you start looking at like, what's motivating this person? What's motivating that person? And that's where like, it's extremely difficult to find maybe a common thread. But I think we started to uncover that But that, again, in a lot of ways, that was grassroots, right?
Mm-hmm.
The CIO was like, I don't really want to spend $7 million. Let's see what cloud can do. That's not a mandate to make true something new, right? Versus Jason had,
true mandate.
Yeah, mandate. We've got to do something financially here. So I think that that's really the gist of it. You know, it's like the gentleman said, he basically said it's the incentive structures. And I'm like, that's really smart.
You honed in on something that you've, the way you phrased it was interesting. You do a lot of listening. And I think the other book that I've recommended on the show before, but I try to listen or read it at least once a year. It's called Never Split the Difference. And it's basically trying to uncover what is the true, like, black swan, the real thing that somebody's negotiating and trying to protect, or like trying to what do they really want? Right. And that's like useful in all relationships, not just work relationships too. And so it sounds to me like you employed like some of those, just listening and reflecting and trying to understand and observing what actually is the thing underneath the thing that drives people.
And
I find that very interesting.
And you can't do that if you're only focused on yourself. Right.
Correct.
And so I think we're talking about great things here on cyber therapy, because I think a lot of people, like that gentleman that I was kind of venting to, they need somebody to talk to about some of this stuff in order to start to get out of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Awesome. Well, okay. So going back to Jason's story, want to pivot a little bit. I know we have spoken very highly of Jason's story so far, but I think the reality is it didn't stay that peachy the whole time, right? Like, things changed.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we had our own set of challenges. It wasn't all roses and cupcakes all the time. You know, I think back fondly of it because of, you know, the success that we had at the end. But, you know, this was a brand new team. There was a lot of, you know, forming and storming before we actually got to work well together. And I just remember, I was an engineer, right? And I had, you know, background in security, and we focused on financial transparency for the business and things like that, right? But, when there were changes in the organization on the security side, like, my security partner, like, we were great. Like, we worked well together. And then he left. He took another gig, right? And then I got a new security person. We didn't have that rapport yet, you know? So it really, it slowed down a lot of our progress. Because the relationship wasn't there, the handoff could have been done better. The documentation between like our guiding principles and my security organizations were different. So, I mean, you know, we ran into our own sets of challenges with the team flexing. I think there could have been, you know, some more deliberate relationship building between the organizations. Like, I think finally, I still talk to my former team even to this day. You know, like, they're awesome. They're successful. You know, we were in the trenches building things and breaking things together. But I don't think that way really about my security counterpart, you know, after the team kind of had to change. But, you know, I think we could have done some things differently in terms of building relationships between the organizations, really getting to know each other. And, like, you know, there's this concept that we have at Amazon experience-based accelerators. And it's basically modeled after GE's workout methodology. And what I mean by that is you put everyone into a room with a goal. You know, and it's as simple as it sounds, right? But, this experience-based accelerator kind of formed out of the workout where we would put everyone in a room where maybe our incentives weren't aligned, but it was get stuff done quickly. It was, if I needed a firewall port open, my firewall person is right over there. We can get this stuff, we could ship applications. And so it's something today, right, as a solution architect, we advise customers, put people in a room together, you know, like that you,
and
there will be organic. Yeah.
I was going to say, and it's not just to build a bike together or do something like that. It's like something tangible, like relevant to your day-to-day work, which I think is hugely important. Because I think a lot of teams and team building activities, granted, they have their space, don't get me wrong, but like to build that sort of relationship in the trenches together, like it needs to be relevant and transferable to your day-to-day, right? And so that's really cool. I did not know the names of those programs. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's really great.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I was just thinking about the fact that you went, you still connect with those folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. I still connect with the people from Blue Jay. I'm thinking about it. Like we get together, like, I don't know, every quarter. And yet we all work at different companies now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we still get together because but nobody from security is ever
in that group. Oh man.
But we went to war together. That's really what it was, you know? And, I've got fond memories of that. So yeah, that was interesting. That's common, I think, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Very cool. This is off the cuff, not on the notes, but this was how do you get to that point with security teams? Because I think so much I know like I'm in cybersecurity, right? So I mm-hmm. should probably have a better answer to this, but how like builders, engineers, like there is a certain like culture and teamwork, camaraderie, helping each other, like shore up each other's knowledge and all that stuff. And then you also have that group over within security also. But like, do you have any ideas on how to like blend the two? Like how to get both groups to just, you know, they respect each other like in their own groups, but how do you get them to really build that relationship together, even though they have usually opposing potentially priorities?
Why should I just stab at that, Jeff?
Oh man. how about I reflect on where I'm at today? In that. I think building rapport, when you don't have a reporting structure that has set goals that are aligned, I think building rapport is one of the most important things that you can do. Looking, you got to put a different lens on and look at the problem, maybe, you know, in such a way where it's not a binary thing, right? There's levels of risk and different risk lenses that you look through. And a lot of times I think developers look at the risk of not getting a feature to production, right? Mm-hmm. And operators look at the risk of an environment going down, right? Mm-hmm. And security looks through a lens of, you know, how do we protect brand reputation and people's data? And you know, there's just different risk lenses that you should be looking through. What is the financial implications of each of those, which is a significant risk? So I think building rapport and understanding how they look through that lens is one of the most important things that you can do. Like because it starts to set things that are really the non-functional requirements of cloud adoption, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of talking about the thing, you talk about what are the things that need to be true so that when you look through that lens, it looks good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think about all of the capabilities that your organization provides for people to adopt cloud like AWS Config. You know, there are different ways to apply risk mitigation controls across all of those areas of interest. So like AWS provides a lot of things out of the gate, control tower, SCPs, you know, there's a lot of ways to enforce, really in a lot of ways, it's just good IT, you know, doing IT well.
Uh-huh.
And, And that's what's great about the cloud providers is they give you a lot of those tools. But we like to bring everything that we're familiar with, both processes and tools. And a lot of times that actually gets in the way.
Yes, of creative thinking on how to actually solve a solution. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm not an Oracle DBA. I am a data persistence expert, right? And not me personally, but like I think about that, you know, and helping people maybe understand, like, no, you are not a CyberArk expert, you know, and we're, and you are a blah, 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 you know, whatever, whatever capability from CyberArk they're using. And so, you know, but understanding that lens that they look through and really how they see themselves as what their expertise is, and maybe even trying to sell them on the fact that like, you're better than what you think you are. You know, you may have 1200 certifications from Cisco, and that's great. But Cisco in the cloud costs a lot of money. I'm not saying that's not valuable. It's just like, you know, that's an additional lens that you look through. I don't know. Jason, does that resonate?
Yeah. I mean, you know, focus on the functional thing that the technology does. Quite frankly, the technology and the tooling don't really matter. Like it's the function that the business gets from that tooling.
Yeah, I think you touched on something interesting yet again. So thank you. And I don't think you said it in so many words, but it was basically being able to put on different lenses. So being able to see, the more that you can see from other people's lenses and communicate that you see it from that lens, that's going to go a long ways in building that trust because it communicates that you understand where they're coming from. And I think just in my own career growth, like that's actually one of the things that has become very, it impresses me when a teammate comes to me and is like, hey, I know that you probably need X, Y, and Z. So here's what I've thought of. And here's my ask, right? So like they've already thought through the whole, not the whole package, they don't have to have all the answers, but the fact that they've like taken the time to really reflect and think through what's in it for both of us because we're on the same team is just super helpful in building that relationship across functions. So very cool.
I'll tell you this. At Blue Jay, I would have never got anywhere on my own. I would have sank with the ship, so to speak. The only times that like we actually won, I would say, the approval of security is when other people in security were singing our song on our behalf. And that's because, I mean, we focused on them, right? And so, and that's an important thing. But that's what I carry with me to this day at, you know, the organization I'm at. Security is a first-class citizen. Everything is about managing risk so it doesn't manage us, right? And that's really an important thing across all of those different risk domains that I think about, and I think it wins friends, it influences people like the book, and I think it's what you really need to actually drive the right incentive structures if they don't exist, you know, at least to start the conversations, and then actually execute transformation.
Can we just touch on your current situation today, just real briefly before we head to game time? You said manage risk so that it doesn't manage you. That sounds like it was born. Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe this is me being presumptuous. But it sounds like it was born out of a situation where they were almost managed by risk. So can you paint the story a little bit about like what the situation was like and how that impacted the cloud journey that you're currently on?
Yeah. Crisis is an interesting animal. I don't know who said it, but They said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Maybe multiple people have said it, right?
I have heard that before, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, COVID was a crisis for many organizations, and a lot of great organizations did amazing things and are stronger today. A lot of great organizations are closing shop, you know, and that's unfortunate, but we're not, and that's awesome. And I think a lot of that is because of how we responded to COVID, how we respond to crisis on a consistent basis, right? That's really, I think about like companies that they fight to survive every day of their life, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the types of companies that I think it's so much easier for people to rally around that crisis to make decisions quickly and make good decisions. And so I think that's like where I'm at today. Mm-hmm. It is about like, what are the crises.
Yeah.
What are the crises that are rallying people, right? And what can you use with those to really make change happen in a positive way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going through some hard economic times right now, and there's a lot of uncertainty. And you know, people are losing their roles and such. And I think about like there's a response to change that you know, we can either accept, embrace, and make the things true that need to be true across all of those risk domains to make the company stronger. Or you know, we could put our head in the sand. Or sit back and eat popcorn. I don't know if a lot of those folks are going to have roles in the future. Mm. I think that people are looking at some of that, you know, the popcorn folks. Do we need popcorn eaters now? You know, I don't know. We're a professional quality assurance popcorn tester, you know. But there's still a role for that person. It's just like they're at a different company.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I think that that's interesting because one of the things that the book, The First 90 Days, touches on is that there are typically like five different types of situations that leaders are running into. They're either at a startup, they're at a turnaround, they are at an accelerated growth, they're at a realignment. So it's not quite burning yet, but you can see a lot of the issues. You just need to get realignment so you don't turn into a turnaround situation. And then sustained success. So like, you know, the companies that are like, they're doing pretty peachy and they can take some of the hits, but they're not going down under anytime soon. And it takes a different approach to each of those business situations and transitions. And it sounds like you found the kind of situation that you perform strongest at, which is in crisis.
That's kind of sad. Am I a speaker? Is that
no? I mean,
that's, no. I'm going to let you know right now. I have tremendous respect for the leaders who can get in, assess a situation, like both, like not just technically, but politically, culturally, across multiple different functions and whatever, and be able to make decisive, like just really quick decisions, and not be afraid of, oh, did I get all the information that I need? Because I tend to sit in that. Am I making the right decision? Do I have all the information I need? And I lose my window, right, of making the swift decision. And I just think that's a leadership, like, stellar skill to have, is to be able to assess all of that and make swift decisions so that you can help move and build momentum for whatever changes are coming.
Yes. So. I like that. That's good.
Yes, I turned a... I'm beating you down for just being good in crisis too. Yes, you are. Make swift decisions. All right. Cool. I think it is now time for the game. I know that you, let me cue the roll, the clip first.
All right. Come on, big money.
Let's do it.
All right. So in our prep call, we discovered that you, both of you, have obviously a lovely bromance here, but also a healthy, what do we call it? Competition between the Ford love and the GM love. Mm-hmm. And so today's game is going to be a matter of being able to not only guess did Ford or GM make this car based on one picture, but if you can actually name the car model itself, you'll get an extra point.
Tweet.
And so, Tyler, if you could go ahead and show the screen. There we go. All right. If you want to play along, you are welcome to join in the comments. But first picture is this one, and we will start with Jason. What is your answer? Is it Ford made or GM made?
That's a Ford.
Dun, 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 dun. You are correct. Okay, sorry. Going forward, if you can name the actual model before I click on it, that'd be great.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you know that was a Ford?
I look like a Galaxy.
Okay. Next question.
Next question. We'll give this one to Jeff.
Oh, man, that looks like some company that claims they have the number one best-selling truck in America. Yeah, that's a Ford F-150.
Yes, the F-Series. Very good, very good.
Is that a Super Duty? Oh, yeah, it's got the thing on the side there. I didn't see that. It's maybe a 250 then.
Okay.
Yeah, I said
you're close.
I was, yeah.
You're close.
Yeah.
It's fine. We'll keep it at 1-to-1 right now.
What's up with all these Ford answers?
I know.
All righty. This one's for Jason.
That's a GM vehicle. That's a Hummer, H2 Hummer.
Oh, he even went with the version.
Yes. Look at you.
Yeah.
Good job. All right. So 3-to-1.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. This one is for you, Jeff.
Oh, man. That's a Ford.
Do you want to take a stab at the model?
I don't know.
It's a race car. Yeah, it's like an F1 or something. I don't know.
It is a Ford, so good job.
Mm-hmm. Good guess. It's a Lotus 49. 49, wow. Yeah, thank you.
But you're correct. It was an F1 car.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I drove one of those, actually.
For real?
You know, on the racetrack, yeah. I paid to drive one of those, you know.
It was like one of those experiences, or you paid like somebody rich and famous?
It was an experience.
That's cool.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Very cool. They have more of those experiences now in like Vegas and like some of the other places to like drive Porsches and stuff. Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm getting sidetracked. Jason, this is for you.
That's GM Pontiac Firebird.
Wow. Good job.
Oh, GTO.
All right.
I mean, you're close.
You can give me a point on that.
I'll give you a point. So right now we are, I think, sorry, this way. Jason's got 4 points because he got the other
Hummer?
Model.
The Hummer.
Yes. And Jeff, you've got 2. We'll give you a point for that because you knew it wasn't. Well, it's so obvious it's an F1. So maybe like 2.5. Are you okay with that? Or give you a full point?
Okay. Yeah, I can go with a half point. It's cool.
We'll go 2.5. Okay.
Cool.
So, here is the next one for you, Jeff.
Oh man, that is. That's a Ford, and it is a, gosh, I want to say Focus. I think that's wrong. Is that a Fiesta? I had a Fiesta, and it was much boxier than this. That might be a Fiesta. I'm going to go with Ford Fiesta.
Incorrect. It's the Ford Ka.
Oh, yeah. looks.
I will be honest. I think the Fiesta is a little bit bigger than this. And I think the, what was the original that you said?
I said Focus.
Yes. I think the Focus is also bigger.
Yeah. I think you're right. This is like a sneaker. This is a shoe right here with wheels.
like a box on wheels. So like Scion IQ had like was small like this, and there are a couple of other small little box wheels. That
the only thing smaller than this is a smart car.
Yes, exactly. All right, so we're at 3.5, Jeff, 4, Jason. Wait, did I give you the point? Yes, I did. Okay. Jason.
Oh, come on. Oh.
Is it Mitt's on me?
Yeah, it's you.
That's a GM. That's a Chevy Volt.
Good job.
You can tell by the rear.
See, there's some oddballs in here.
Yeah,
there's some oddballs
in here. You're getting all the easy ones.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Give me I get a picture of like a cloud.
That's what I talked before. Oh, she gave me the easy
one. Oh, my. What a world. What a world.
All right. This one's for you, Jeff.
That's an Escalade GM or a Suburban. You know, it's a GM. It looks like an Escalade. Or actually, yeah, I think that's an Escalade. If not, it is a Lincoln.
Good job. The Escalade. Very nice. Very nice.
Oh, that's, is that 2 points?
Yes, 2 points. You're at 5.5 now to 6.
Oh.
All right. You know what? Just to make things easy, we're going to just give you the whole point for the F1 car comment. So you're at 6-6 now.
Ooh, yeah.
Changing the rules as we go. All right. This one's for you, Jason.
That's a Ford E-Series.
I'd say Econoline.
Econoline.
Let's see.
It is a Ford.
Yeah.
But
do they have a just cargo?
They didn't put that. That's okay. Yeah. I'll go with
the styling for the original Ford Cargo.
Cargo.
I guess is the actual name of it.
I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know. I think we both are like all about the East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't tell me if what you said was correct or not. So
that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. We'll just call it 1 point there. So 7-6. All right, this one's for you, Jeff.
Yeah, that is a GM.
Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going.
No, I don't know what that car is. I'm gonna say GM because it's wrong. And I like GM. Yep.
It is the Ford Mercury Cougar. Yes.
Good job, man.
Yeah, man.
You're so on top of this.
That's okay.
Good thing I didn't give him a chance to
say. Oh, come on.
I know.
Come on. No. Oh, what's coming up next? Oh, you my got gosh. A
split window? I can't tell.
This that's one's for you, Jason.
GM. That's Corvette.
Very nice. Yes. Good job.
Rigged.
All right, we are 8-7 right now. Yes. This one's for you, Jeff.
A Ford Model T.
I think so.
Good job. So you are now ahead.
Yes. Finally got an easy one.
Yeah. All righty, Jason, this one's for you. You're down 8-9.
Oh.
That's a GM. That's a Camaro.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's a you are now up 10-9. Alrighty, Jeff. Since we have been going back and forth, this is for you. We have a lot of questions, so we're not going to get through all of them. So after this one, it's going to be like do or die at this point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do one question each. Yes, and you can wager however many points you want.
That looks like a GTO to me, but I don't think that's true.
You're so nice to be helping him.
Yeah.
I'm not helping. I'm just watching you struggle.
Yeah. This is terrible. I don't know. I'm going to say Ford GTO. I don't know. It's not.
Close.
Oh, it's Ford Mercury.
Close. Yes, you are close. You are tied. You are now 10-10.
Oh, this is great. All right.
So, for each of your questions next, you can wager however many points. If you get it right, you get the points.
Okay.
If you don't get it right, then you lose the points.
Sounds like Jeopardy.
So, Jason, how much? Jason, how much would you like to wager before I show you?
All points. 10 points.
All in. Okay. Here is your question.
That's a GM vehicle. That's a Pontiac Aztec.
Good job. I knew it was a Pontiac. It's literally only
that was the most weird vehicle.
I know.
Apart from like the Juke.
That's right.
Like you could, I don't know.
I get these ones.
All right, Jeff, you get to wager your points.
I have no choice but to wager 10 in order to be close.
To be matched. And then we'll do definitely at the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So this
Here
one
we go.
Is for you.
Oh, God. Is that a Ford Lincoln or a Lincoln Town Car?
Good job.
Navigator. Yeah.
You're close.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give it to you. But Thank really, you.
Right.
Jason definitely had like the precise, he was sure.
He's too good at this game. But that's why he's great at being an AWS solutions architect.
We need good partners.
Yeah.
To do doing it this way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Super appreciate you both being here today and being able to tune in together. This was a lot of fun. And continue making waves, building those relationships, and appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this was a blast.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thank you so much again for tuning in to this episode of Cyber Therapy. I know we went a little teeny bit long this time, but just so that y'all know, our next episode is on June 7th. It is going to be with Jeff Foley, who is the lead of the OWASP Amass project. And so definitely tune in June 7th at 3 p.m. Eastern. Other than that, we will be, I think, at Cisco Live in just a few weeks. Also the same week, actually, of the next episode. But other than that, I think that's all I got for you. So thanks again. See you next time.